I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Beth Kennedy Jones. She's performing the Lena Horne Songbook on Friday, the 22nd of May at El Farol right here in Santa Fe. And Ron Newman joins us. He's the musical accompanist to that show. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary. Thank Charlotte. You.
I am so excited that you're doing Lena Horne. What an incredibly multi-talented, charismatic, beautiful, politically active human being.
Yes, all those things and above. And as we were just mentioning before, having a career that spanned such a huge period of time from the 30s right through the 90s. I mean, what singer can keep singing for 60 years?
How did she sound? Are there recordings of
right up into the very end. She was recording.
And she
changed. Actually, her voice, you know, got better in the very beginning. In fact, for the first 10 years, it was said she couldn't sing a note, but she looked good. And when she got her first job, which is when she was 16 years old, her mom took her out of school, and Lena wanted to be a school teacher, so when you get taken out of school, it doesn't really work too well. But her mother took her to the Cotton Club, and she sang, and they said she could not sing a note, she could not dance, but she looked good. And that's what those gangsters that ran the Cotton Club liked. So she got that job, and that is what supported herself, her mother, and her stepfather at the ripe age of 16 in the Depression in 1933.
Amazing. I'm going to just go ahead and venture a guess here that she actually could probably sing okay. Because how could you become Lena Horne and not be able to sing a note at 16?
Time. Working. Yeah. Working with some incredible musicians. Being enthusiastic. You know, I start out the show with a song about being happy. And I think she made a decision with everything that she went through, even in her, you know, her political activism, that she was going to take a sense of joy. And with her sense of joy, she then was available with all these incredible musicians that she worked with to learn and to learn how to sing. And she was considered a pop singer, but then she started getting all this recognition as a jazz singer. You know.
And so do you kind of, in your show, go through that evolution of her life? Is it kind of a chronological thing?
Well, I don't do her in first person. Remember when I think we did an interview for Julie London, and that I really did first person. But this, especially because she isn't an African-American woman, I felt that would not be correct. But what I try to do is I try to sing her songs in the style that she did them, with using her arrangements, her approach. And then I also do all of this bio information about what I see as the really wonderful points of her life that moved her life forward to be who she was. So I don't go in and out. It's not schizophrenia, but I do try to, when I'm doing the bio information, I try to do that as Beth and then do the songs as Lena. And then sometimes Lena just, because I do a lot of her quotes. Because in the end, I think that she really became a teacher. I think she taught us so much about being a woman, about being a vocalist and an actress and a person, but a political activist, and a person that was really working for her, you know, would be considered her people, especially at that time. That was such a huge embrace. And when she just like takes over sometimes when I'm doing a quote of hers, you know, I start going into Lena, which is the best part.
Right. Now, wasn't she blacklisted during the McCarthy era?
She was. First, she was on suspension. She had done, you know, film work in Hollywood. And as I mentioned before, her contract was negotiated by her dad in Hollywood. She was the first black performer to get a long-term, it was a seven-year contract, with a major motion picture studio, which was MGM. And at that time, there were a lot of other, you know, black performers, but her dad contracted that she could not be a slave, a maid, or a whore.
So she couldn't play those roles
in
the movies?
She could not.
That is so cool.
So she was completely separated, because on the set, none of the other African-Americans would talk with her because they thought she was just too uppity. And then none of the other whites were talking to her because she was black. So she was completely alone when she was there. And, you know, just so isolated. And then when she was in a film, because at that time there were so many films, if there was a black in a film, it could not be shown in different places, primarily in the South. So she would be put into a film that then her part could be easily taken out of. So she would play Lena Horne singing in the club, being Lena Horne, and then when that film would go to the South, she was edited out of the film.
Oh, my goodness.
But then, and she thought she was going to get to do, to play, to sing Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine, which they, you know, the studio gave to Ava Gardner. And then they wanted her to do St. Louis Woman. But she refused to fall into any kind of negative stereotype of African-American women. So she refused to do St. Louis Woman because it was this black harlot. And she ended up being put on suspension by MGM. And then she went through McCarthyism. And so what could have been the thing that totally tied her down, wrecked her, it's actually what started her on her international work, because that's when she went over to Europe and started performing everywhere in the world and built this enormous international audience.
And that's true of so many African-American musicians, jazz folks, who went to Europe, and that's where they found their place, mm-hmm. their audience, mm-hmm. their love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes when I look at the racial situation that we have in the United States now, it's easy to think, gee, not a whole lot has changed. But when you think of somebody like Lena Horne being on a movie set and nobody will talk to her, you think, okay, you know, we've made at least some progress in this country.
Yeah, and I know, I was thinking about it this morning, I cannot at any point talk about the racial situation today because I don't have enough background in it. At one point, I was very active in Washington, D.C. I used to produce all of Washington, D.C.'s D.C. public school events, so I was very, very involved with that community. I'm now so far away from it, I don't know enough about anything involved with it except for, like, briefly on the news. But I do know at the time that she was involved, she was so unhappy in Hollywood. And she tells this great story how she came back to New York over a Christmas break, and she went to one of her favorite clubs, and there's Count Basie, and like everybody's there, all of her friends, and she sits down and she's just whining away. She goes, I hate it, they're treating me so terrible out there, I don't want to go back there, please don't make me go back there, I want to be here, I want to be with the people that love me. And Count Basie said, tomorrow morning I am putting you on the train and you are going back to Hollywood because they have chosen you. And you are going to be good, and you are going to be smart, and you are going to perform well because you can do it. And she did. And Count Basie put her on the train, and she went back. And so there, it was a whole different mindset, too, of not trying to... She was breaking down boundaries that existed at that time, but in a way that kind of kept with the system, I think.
It's so interesting, because basically he's saying, you're a leader... Like it or not, go
yeah.
lead.
Yeah.
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 Very interesting. So we're talking with Beth Kennedy Jones about the Lena Horne songbook, which she's performing. Now, Ron Newman, you are on piano. Is this like some of your favorite music?
Well, like she said, we're doing the original arrangements. So Lena surrounded herself with incredible musicians who did some really unique arrangements. So the songs themselves kind of span the genre between jazz and show music. And some of the songs are well-known jazz standards, which she may do in a typical jazz way, or she may completely rearrange and do in a show style or something that it's hard to describe that kind of encompasses both.
Interesting. So when you do a performance like this, I mean, it's one night only, but let's say you were doing it a few nights in a row, would it change from night to night? I mean, are you kind of like taking an improvisational feel to it?
I don't know if you will, but I'm going to.
Well, yeah. I kind of consider myself a jazz artist, so yes. I mean, the form has to be there, but... You know, an audience member in the front could say something. You have to respond to that, whether it's within the song or within the dialogue or within a smile. I mean, somebody will do something and you react to it. So you've got that piece of it. You've got a different audience all the time.
Audiences make a huge
But then just
difference.
Each night you come in as a different person.
Yeah. How does the audience make a difference to you, Ron?
Oh, the energy of the room. People don't realize the musicians are really feeding off of that. And... sometimes musicians don't realize until they, wow, today was really great. What was the difference? And it's the audience.
Now, you have to do, of course, a bunch of rehearsal beforehand, and in that at that time, there is no audience, or maybe there's one of your friends is there or something like that, but is there an emptiness to that process, or is it just a whole different thing?
No. It's kind of like you always hear football players talk about execute the play. So my job is to execute as perfectly as I can, and then when the time comes, then you're able to do the magic.
Yeah.
Because when the play happens, then all this magic happens on the field for the football players, and it's the same for musicians, so you just try to execute.
Now, did either of you ever see Lena Horne in person?
Yes. Yeah.
No, I didn't.
In 1981, when she did her one-woman show on Broadway at the Niederlander Theater, as she would say. Actually, my stepmother's interior decorator was the interior decorator for her dressing room. So we got these great seats. And I started getting told many years earlier, people would look at me and they'd go, you look a lot like Lena Horne. And I can remember the first time I was like, oh, wow, I look like somebody that somebody knows, you know, that young. And then looked up and I went, oh, I look like this African-American
woman. Yeah, you kind of do.
That's kind of cool, though.
Well, she's clearly mixed-blood person.
Well, that's not really clear. I mean, and it's interesting. I mean, she's got this incredible heritage. She just wasn't plucked out of the ocean. I mean, she does, in her book, like the book on the horns, it really goes back into her heritage. But and it's kind of hard to grow up in the South and not have that kind of mix, right? But yeah, I think it's just the high cheekbones and the sassiness. I think I look more like her sassiness than anything else. But she was fabulous in this show, and she was 63 years old on Broadway. She did 333 performances. It still to date is the longest one-woman musical show ever on Broadway, and she never missed a show. I mean, and she was just, the show was so terrific. But the
was it inspiring to you as an artist when you saw it?
Yeah, especially because I had a brand new baby at that time, and I was just preparing to do another show. I was going to charity, and it really helped me with my performance at charity. But I did want to mention when you talk about having an audience, no, not because usually when you're rehearsing, you have no audience. But I work a lot with her songs. And most of them are done in a show, like the show on Broadway, but other shows. And so there's all this applause. And so it's really interesting when you, like, because she gets this huge applause, you know. It's like, well, it's probably not going to be that much applause. But you kind of, like, you kind of hear, she works off of that. And that really does help, too, because you're motivated to really want to work for that audience.
What are some of your, both of you, your favorite songs that Lena Horne made famous?
Well, Stormy Weather's got to be up there somewhere, because that's such a, so known for that.
Yeah.
But Love Me or Leave Me.
Mm-hmm. What is it? Make Me Happy. I Want to Make You Happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her arrangement of Surrey with the Fringe on top. It's so unique.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
A jazz version of that song from Oklahoma.
Yeah. And I when she performed it on Broadway, she first did one song that she got an award for. She said, I did that song because it got such and such award, but I'm going to do this song just because I like it. And she goes into a very unique rendition.
Which is not typical Lena Horne, I think. It's so mellow and so laid back.
Yeah.
It's not typical Oklahoma either.
Yeah.
Right. Now, after the McCarthy era and all that blacklisting, then she became a part of the civil rights movement. And wasn't she there in 1963 at the March on Washington, the I Have a Dream speech, all of that?
Yeah. In fact, she got the award later on for that, like at the very end of her life. But she actually was involved before. I mean, there was she was a really good friend of Paul Robeson, which is one of the reasons why she was blacklisted. I know, but so she was active pretty much before. She gave a lot of money to organizations that were trying to work with certain what we would consider liberal causes, you know. So, yeah.
So the show is Beth Kennedy Jones singing the Lena Horne songbook with Ron Newman on piano. It's this coming Friday, the 22nd of May, and the show is at 8 o'clock, but you can go for dinner at 6:30 in the evening, and it's in that nice little back room at El Farol, which is kind of a theater space. And they always do flamenco in there, but they're doing other things.
Yeah, they're starting this new, you know, new format.
Series.
New format.
Yeah.
That and it'll be taking place several times during the summer of this Thursday, Friday. Instead of the dance, that they're going to do these special shows. And on this Thursday, it's going to be the Desert Darlings.
Thursday is the Desert Darlings. And we have yodeling in the background, ladies and gentlemen. And Friday is Beth Kennedy Jones and Ron Newman, the Lena Horne Songbook. For more information and reservations, you can call 505-983-9912. You can also look at elferolsf.com. Beth and Ron, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio
Cafe.
Thank
you, Mary Charlotte.
Our pleasure.